This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
For 2 months, Sultan and Nassar were standing on the inside looking out. They arrived in Australia on tourist visas, and when they were asked by the person at customs, they said, yes, we would be seeking asylum. And from that moment, everything changed. Their tourist visas were cancelled, they were handcuffed and put into a van, and they were taken to a detention centre. And that's where they were struck. Both worked as journalists, and luckily they were able to use their contacts to share their story with the rest of the world about what was going on for them in detention here in Australia. 7 days ago, things changed for them. Nassar was released from detention, but Sultan was left behind. Thanks to a bureaucratic bungle in the paperwork, Sultan was still stuck in detention because of a medical appointment on the Monday, while Nassar was free. The pair didn't want to be separated, but they had no choice. On that same day, the Minister for Immigration, David Coleman, took indefinite personal leave. So who knows what was going to happen? Was Sultan going to be stuck in detention? When I put up the podcast at the beginning of this week, highlighting two conversations that I'd had with Sultan, we didn't know what was going to happen. I was hoping that we would be able to apply some pressure, just like the petition that Just Equal had had, and being able to make the acting Minister for Immigration, Minister Tudge, do something about it. Luckily, all this pressure that the community applied made a difference, and the next day on Tuesday, Sultan was freed from detention. It's only been a few days, but he speaks to us now about what it was like, what the future holds, and how he's going to continue to stand up for people living in detention, and how we can all do something about that so that they can have a better life here in Australia.
There was two times that I remember were the worst in detention. Actually, not three times. The worst was that when my partner and I got separated in the hospital. If you remember, we were both ill and we were in hospital for a while, and he got better before I did. So he went back to detention, and I was worried about his safety. The other bad day was last Friday when we were both supposed to be let out together, and some snafu had happened in the paperwork, and he ended up getting released, and I ended up being stuck inside. But, you know, we had the assurances of the immigration department that on Monday I'd be released. So I woke up on Monday morning, and I was all just about ready to pack up the room and everything, and, you know, just ready with my bags. And then 11 o'clock came, and 12 o'clock came, and then 1 o'clock came, and I called my partner. He had come to the jail himself, actually, to the Immigration Detention Center, waiting outside for me to be released, supposedly around 12 o'clock. And then our immigration case manager saw him in the reception. He's like, what are you doing here? And he's like, well, you know, I'm here to pick up my partner. And she's like, oh, he's not getting released today. And I heard that over the phone, and it was just like somebody just punched me in the gut. Because at that moment, I realized, oh, my gosh, am I getting out? And then there was no indication of when I'd be getting out. Minister Coleman had just gone on personal leave, yeah. And Tudge had just come in, and all the paperwork was being sent back to be redrafted, and Tudge needed to be briefed about things.
And we're at the end of the year. Like, that possibly means that you could have spent...
Exactly.
Yeah, you could have just been stuck.
Exactly, and that was my biggest concern, is that I'd be stuck. Because the government now ends it on, like, today, well, Friday. And then they go on holiday, and according to my lawyer, I would actually be in until February. Which, as you know, is another 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And I've already been in detention for 9 weeks, and I thought I'd be getting out that day. And then, you know, it was just a horrific day. So Peter Grest got in touch with me. And for those that don't know who Peter Grest is, he's the former Al Jazeera journalist who's an Australian national that had been imprisoned in Egypt for well over a year in conditions that were far more horrific than mine were. So to get him to start messaging and telling me, hey, I heard that, you know, you might be slightly delayed in getting released. You cannot hold on to hope. Hope is not your friend in situations like this. It really, really, really gave me a lot of strength to make it through the day. So by the end of Monday evening, I had already put it in my mind that, you know, this isn't going to end. This might very possibly drag on for another week or two or three. And I had said to myself, do that. And then Tuesday morning, there was no news. And then I get a message from Peter Grest, and he said that he's been in touch with the Dutton's deputy, and that he was looking at my paperwork right there and then, because the media storm that was generated by the gay community once Nassar and I were separated that previous Friday was really, really, really strong. And people were calling Coleman's office and Tudge's office and Dutton's office. I mean, the gay community really, really, really got together. and they made us their cause. And for that, I'm so, so, so grateful. Because without the gay community support, many people would not, the people that needed to move may not have moved. I mean, Ivan Hinton Teo, and from Just Be Equal, and Joe Balls from Switchboard. I mean, they were just instrumental in just increasing the pressure and putting on the pressure. So it really, really made a huge difference. So around 12 o'clock on Tuesday, my lawyer, Allison Battison from Human Rights for All, she picked up the phone and she told me, she actually sent me a message. She's like, get ready, you're getting out today.
Wow.
And my reaction is like, I won't believe it until I see it. So just to make sure, I called my immigration manager, the case manager at Villawood, and I asked her, is this true? She's like, yeah, pack your stuff, you're getting out of here. And she was actually happy to get rid of us, because we created such a kerfuffle around our detention that she was also getting calls from members of the gay community, and it just, everybody was harassing them all around, that they just wanted to get rid of us and get us out of there.
It really speaks to the power of grassroots activism in so many different things, and how we can really speak up and do a lot.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, people, they take up, they do activism and stuff, and a lot of the time the people that, you know, they're trying to help out don't actually get in touch. It's so impersonal, you know, for the activists, and they're doing it just out of the good of their own heart. But now, for the first time in my life, I was the one who needed help really, really desperately. And to just see the whole community come around us, I mean, we left our families in the dead of night in Saudi Arabia, quite possibly never to see them again, at least not in Saudi Arabia. So we came to Australia feeling very, very, very alone. And just throughout this whole detention over this last month, we feel that we've been adopted by the Australian gay community and that we now have a family. I mean, Ivan and Joe, they came and visited us in detention. And that was so touching. I mean, I'm not a big crier, but I mean, Joe and Ivan saw me shedding a few tears. Just to have that connection with someone really meant so much.
It really makes you realize just how truly isolating detention is. If you haven't been there, or if you don't know what it's like, that kind of incarceration, you're just cut away from everything.
You are, and in a foreign country, foreign to us, where we don't know anyone, it was isolating in every way. I mean, my mother didn't know that I was in hospital or in detention until I called her on Tuesday. I called her up and I'm like, hey, Mom, guess what? She's like, oh, how's Australia? Because for the previous 2 months, I've been telling her, yes, Australia's great. You know, the hamburgers here, they taste exactly like they do in America. The opera house and everything is wonderful. And the people are so nice. And she had no clue.
Yeah.
So then I told her, look, it's time to sit down. I need to tell you a couple of things. And
what was that like?
Well, she was shocked that I was able to keep it quiet. She was shocked that I was sick and actually had quite a serious illness, and that Australia actually had me hospitalized and taken care of at taxpayer expense. And then she was shocked that she missed the whole entire media storm around us. That's because she was just so busy in her own work in abroad. So at the end, she said, you know, Sultan, throughout your whole life, you've always thrown little surprises like this at her. Like, for example, when I was covering the war in Iraq back in 2003, I actually called Mom from Baghdad, and I was like, hey, I'm covering the war. And she could hear explosions and cannons and missiles in the background. And every once in a while in life, I'll come up with these little surprises. So she knows that I have a way of just surviving certain things.
I just want to touch on something that you said. It was that hope is not your friend. What does that mean?
No. Hope brings with it disappointment. If you hold on to getting out on Monday, for example, and you put all your eggs in that basket, it's like, I'm getting out on Monday, and you just don't see past Monday and getting out on Monday, you have that hope. And then when that hope is crushed, it's especially crushing when you're in a detention environment, because you're not able to control anything in there. Decisions are being made by other people for you. And when you have hope and it doesn't work out, it crushes you more than it crushes you on the outside, you know?
Yeah.
So hope is not your friend. I mean, definitely you can hope for things to work out. But one thing that Nassar and I kept kind of saying back and forth is, you know, hope for the best, but expect the worst. And that's simply because, you know, you're hoping for the best, but be prepared for the worst, just in case. Like, my ultimate nightmare prior to us being released was that he would get released early, or that I would get released early, and we wouldn't be together. And then that happened. So, you know, it's just holding on to hope and then getting crushed is particularly hurtful when you're in a detention environment.
So what has it been like now? It's been a few days, the two of you together. I know you've been doing a lot of media and just being out in the world, but what is it like now being together and just being out in Sydney and out in the world?
The first day we went out together was Wednesday morning. We took the metro down to, well, first of all, figuring out the metro and the bus system and all that was fun in itself. But it truly felt like we had just arrived in Sydney through the airport, and we had just arrived. And the previous 9 weeks that we had spent in detention seemed like it was just a bad nightmare that we had just woken up from, you know. So literally, it felt like we just arrived in a new country despite having been here for more than 2 months. Because we only saw the airport, we saw the hospital, and we saw the detention center and the roads in between.
Wow.
So to be out and, you know, see the Opera House and the Botanical Gardens and, you know, go have a couple of beers on Oxford Street, that was a lot of fun. And it just actually made it seem like it was just a bad nightmare that we woke up from. Now it's been 2 or 3 days. Day one, when I came out, actually the following day on Wednesday, I did an interview on the project.
Yep.
I spoke a little bit about the drugs and the drug situation in detention. And right after that, several detention centers all over the country were raided for drugs. And a lot of people kind of got their drugs taken away. And that kind of started a cleanup effort. So that was good. But my lawyer, I was having lunch with her, or dinner rather, yesterday, and with Senator Janet Rice, who was instrumental in getting us released early. And my lawyer told me, you better not ever go back to detention again, you know, just walk by the wall, do not even ride the metro without buying a ticket, just be very, very, very careful. And that's our main focus now, is to abide by Australian rules and laws and regulations to make sure that we are productive members of Australian society. I mean, we were given bridging visa keys, which allow us to work, pending our permanent protection visas coming out. And that would be just a matter of a couple of months, hopefully. We're working towards becoming Australian and becoming productive members of society.
It's nice that you can kind of, now you're together, you're out in the world, and you can look back and go, that's just a nightmare, but it's able to be passed so quickly. But I guess it's also important to highlight that you're very lucky. You're both very lucky because of the contacts you have and the community that have stood up for you and have rallied and gotten behind you both. But there's still plenty of people who are in detention, who haven't committed any crimes, who are still looking to be able to come into this country legally. And it's important for us all to remember that what you went through is something they're still experiencing.
That's very, very true. It's like exactly as you said, Dean. You know, I speak English. I have influential media friends. We had Alison Batterson as our lawyer. But there are many people that come in, apply for asylum, that don't speak English, don't have lawyers, do not have influential media friends, and they end up languishing for months and months and months, and even a year or two, without any information, without anybody rooting for them, without an LGBT community coming together, without a senator pushing for them. So for us to actually have been out in 9 weeks is quite amazing. But it's very, very disheartening and very, very misleading that when you look at the immigration website, and you can actually, anybody who's listening can look it up themselves, and there's a section in there that talks about asylum, and it says that you are allowed to apply for asylum if you arrived here on a legal Australian visa, which is exactly
what
we
did. Which
is
what you did.
It's exactly what we did. But when we arrived at the airport, the Immigration Department and the Australian Border Force said that because we arrived with the intention of applying for asylum, then that immediately invalidates our tourist visas, and therefore we become unlawful. But it is not against the law to apply for asylum. So the laws need to be re-looked at. The immigration website needs to be looked at. It needs to become a lot more clear to explain to people that should you come here on a tourist visa and then decide to apply for asylum, then it can work against you and you can end up in detention. But even being in detention itself has accelerated the process in itself, because otherwise, you know, had we lied to the ABF agent that asked us, are you planning on applying for asylum, had we said no, they may have let us out of the airport and we would have been out in Australian society. And then to start the asylum process that way would take much, much, much longer than it would as we did it. So all in all, I have no regrets about telling you the truth. I mean, here we are a little over 2 months later with work permits. Usually it takes months. But, Dean, if you'll just allow me a moment, there's one case of a young man that we went that we met in there. We'll just refer to him as M47. Now, this young man, when he was 6 years old, his family, something happened to his mom and his dad, and he was put in an orphanage in the Canary Islands. From the Canary Islands, he was moved to an orphanage in Madrid at about 10 years old. He ran away from that orphanage, was picked up by a couple, and they took him in and basically made them their house slave. And he used to tend to their chickens. At about 12 years old, he ran away. And he made his way through Europe somehow, and he became adopted by Norwegian street gangs who fed him and clothed him and treated him, you know, properly, but took advantage of him. That young man ended up learning how to speak Spanish and English and Arabic and Norwegian and Icelandic, believe it or not. And he wanted to get away from the gangs in Europe. So he got on a flight here to, somehow got on a flight to Australia, I'm sorry, on a boat, came to Australia with the hope of ending up in New Zealand. And then he ended up getting caught by the Australian authorities and put in detention by the age of 20. He's been in detention for 10 years now. And his biggest problem is that he doesn't have proper identity papers. So that in itself has kept him in detention for 10 years. Now, I met him when we were inside, and he happens to be one of the clients of Allison, our lawyer. And he's such a nice young man, and he's so handsome and so polite and so proper. But he's lost in the system, and he's been in it now for 10 years. I couldn't imagine. I could not imagine. It's sad. It truly, truly is sad.
I mean, what you were experiencing, what you guys experienced for just 2 months, he's been experiencing for 10 years.
Exactly. And even more, I mean, he's been an abused child since the age of 6, and instead of, you know, somebody having some compassion here, people in the position to sign off on his paperwork, Peter Dutton said, "This, you will never, ever have an Australian visa." And it's just tragic.
But we need to be able to send him somewhere or do something with him or let him go somewhere. We can't just keep him behind in detention. There's got to be something that can be done.
Well, you would think so, but this is part of the problem is that, you know, once people come to Australia and then Australia doesn't want them, then it makes it difficult for other countries to accept. It's like, okay, well, why doesn't Australia want them?
Yeah.
And then quite difficult. And there's many people that are kind of caught in limbo in the system that have been in detention for 10 years. Now, this is a young man that's been a victim all his life. I mean, he's been a victim of physical abuse and sexual abuse. He was taken advantage of by gangs. And his story is verifiable. And Allison, our lawyer, has been fighting for him for 10 years. But not all of them are success stories like mine and the SARS are. We were lucky, believe it or not.
You're very lucky.
We were very lucky, yes. So, I mean, if you also think about the people that are arrived by boat, I mean, there are children in detention, families that arrive by boat, seeking a better life, a better future, a safer future. And they're taken and put on in Nauru or Manus Island, and they sit there for 6 and 7 years. I mean, our lawyer, Allison, had the client who arrived with his two boys. The boys are aged about 7 and 8 years old. While in detention, they were raped. I mean, raped in the most horrible way that you can imagine. The person that actually raped him went to trial and was found not guilty somehow, and the government took away the two boys from their father, took them out of detention, put them in foster care, and kept the father in detention, remaining at Villawood, where we were, separated from his children. So the children already went through the most horrific type of rape you can imagine, to only then be victimized again and ripped from their father's arms. So there's so many horrible, horrible, horrible things that people have to go through just to experience the asylum system and the refugee system that really Australia must look at the way that it handles these cases.
Absolutely.
Really, it must.
Now, I know you're looking towards your new life here in Australia, getting jobs, being a part of our society, but is this also something that you're going to keep advocating for just as people advocated for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it would be not right for us to just say, hey, we made it and that's it. I mean, going through this experience has really opened up our eyes to a lot of injustice that occurs here in Australia. I mean, it's a bastion of freedom and democracy, and it's a great country, and the people are wonderful. But there's still so many people that are being so unnecessarily victimized. And I mean, like I said, you know, what my partner and I went through was nothing compared to what so many others are going through. And there are many other gay people in detention as well. But I mean, there are couples that arrive, but because of the way that their culture is, they do not have, you know, pictures of themselves holding each other, you know, or kissing at a gay bar somewhere, because it doesn't exist. So they actually have to prove that they're gay. And then how do you do that? I mean, when we were filming the project, the cameraman asked us to hold hands. And for my partner and I, that is something that we never, ever did in Saudi Arabia. We're not, you know, we don't do public displays of affection. So that was very, very difficult. But there are many gay people in detention. There are some transgender people in detention that have been there for a long, long time. And everybody has their own story. Everybody has their own case. But it seems that the government just slots everybody into one kind of category, and that's it. Yeah. And that just is not right. So as far as I'm concerned, yesterday I was having lunch with Allison, our lawyer, down on the wharf in downtown Sydney, and I, you know, we decided that we were going to continue to work together to try to help as many people as we can to get out of the nightmare that we both lived for a couple of months. Me with my media contacts, her with her legal expertise, we're hoping to be able to make some change. Just like many advocated for us, I hope to advocate for them.
And because of those people who advocated for you, that's how you were able to share your story and your voice, just not only here on Joy, but also on Star Observer. Well, I was more than happy to do that. And whatever we can do to share these stories, help these people, help them get out and become a part of society, we should all be doing.
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot of people from the LGBT society that are, they're also being victimized inside in the detention system and asylum system. And these people deserve an equal chance as we got.
This has been a special Mad Wednesday extended podcast speaking to Sultan, who spent 2 months in detention but is now free. He and his partner are able to start a whole new life in Australia, something that so many more should be able to do. For We Are Young and Free shouldn't just be a lyric in our national anthem. It should be something we all stand by. We should be a more welcoming country, and we need to put pressure on our government to do more to create a space that lets everyone feel like they have a place.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.